Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Razad Gaurav, who is CEO of LlamaSoft. And today we're going to talk about how to combat uncertainty and risks in global supply chains. Now, whether it's the escalating tariffs between the U.S. and China, or what's happening or not happening with Brexit in Europe, or the status of quote-unquote new NAFTA, or other trade agreements, there's certainly one thing that is clear in the industry today, and that is that there is growing risk and uncertainty in the global supply chains. So how are leading companies, you know, navigating these risks and uncertainties? Well, that's going to be the main question we're going to address in today's episode. And it's great to have Razad with us today, where he's going to share some insights from a global study that LlamaSoft did on this topic, as well as, you know, share some recommendations and advice on what actions companies can take to prepare effectively for whatever happens in the weeks and months ahead. So Razad, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Adrian. Good to see you again.
Likewise. It's been a long time. You and I go back many, many years, and it's great to see you there at the helm of LlamaSoft. And, you know, certainly I've had the opportunity to, you know, work with many of your colleagues there over the years, and certainly appreciate all you guys do in the industry. Before we kind of dive into some of the key findings of the study that I just, referenced, you know, tell us a little bit about the research. I mean, what was the driving force behind it? What were you guys looking to learn from this study, and, you know, who participated and so forth?
Yeah. And Adrian, the impetus for this is exactly what you said in your opening comments, which is, you know, there's so much risk and uncertainty in the supply chain. And obviously, whether it's here in the US or in China or in Europe or in the UK with Brexit, there has been an escalation in the ongoing policy debate as it relates to trading. And obviously, this has significant impact on supply chains, how companies are determining their sourcing strategies, their distribution strategies, their ongoing logistics operations, routings. And so we kept getting pinged by many customers all around the world in their interest in investigating how to evaluate potential scenarios of the future. And in doing so, we thought it'd be good to get a pulse of the market in terms of how are companies thinking about these policy shifts and these trade wars that are escalating. And how are these policy shifts impacting supply chain decisions? So we looked at supply chain decision makers, about 725 supply chain decision makers across five regions, including Asia Pacific, North America here in the States, as well as across Europe and the UK. And we designed a study to really get the pulse on what are supply chain decision makers thinking, what's on their mind, how are they thinking about adapting and evolving their supply chains as these policy shifts happen and as these uncertainties unravel. So that was really the impetus for the study.
Yeah, you know, I think, going through various conferences last year, I mean, that's what I heard a lot from supply chain logistics executives was that, you know, all of this uncertainty, you know, was really, preventing them to really know which direction, you know, what are some of the right actions to take? Because as you and I both know, you know, this is a complicated system. So things you might do to save money on the transportation side might impact inventory, things that, you know, and some decisions just really are more strategic in nature where, you know, if you're going to do something that's big, like, you know, source from a different region, you know, that could be, you know, something that has a more long-term impact. And if you make the wrong decision there, you know, that can have a much, you know, longer lasting effect. So, you know, you want to be as informed as possible and smart as possible when making those types of decisions. So again, this uncertainty, this risk is something that, you know, was certainly top of mind for a lot of the executives that I talked to as well. I know you guys sent out a press release on that. And one of the things that came out of the survey results that I saw was that taxes and duties and economic nationalism were the two biggest challenges that companies are currently facing. You know, based on your experience and view of the market, I mean, are companies well-equipped to deal with those challenges? And, you know, what are the factors that are perhaps limiting, you know, their ability to respond effectively?
Yeah, what's interesting is, I mean, most supply chains today, particularly the companies we tend to work with, they have a global element to them. Very few supply chains in the world today are entirely based in one domestic country, right? Maybe your own operations, maybe, but your supplier base or your supplier, where you're expecting raw materials or products or merchandise could be coming from overseas. And typically, whether you're a company based here in North America or across Europe, you are selling and distributing your products and services across multiple regions as well. So globalization has occurred, right? And it has been happening for the last 5,000 years. That's not a new phenomenon. I think the policy inclination for different governments around the world, they keep changing. And that's an ongoing debate that happens. And different folks have different perspectives on that. But I think when it comes to companies, and when I'm talking about companies, I'm talking about manufacturers, retailers, distributors, third-party logistics companies. Most companies, most of these sort of companies are at the receiving end of these policy changes that governments are driving. Now, in many cases, they are trying to become active, but in most cases, they are the recipients and they have to react to these changes. One of the interesting things that came out of the study was that only 47% of the respondents thought that they would be making significant strategic decisions as a result of some of these policy shifts and some of the economic nationalism that was taking place. Now, that varies dramatically from sub-region to sub-region. And also, we saw some differences in verticals because different industries get impacted to varying degrees. But in most cases, what I'll say is companies are grappling with the ongoing shifts in duties and tariffs. Companies are grappling with the uncertainties related to the unknowns as it relates to Brexit, for example. And companies are trying to get better educated as it relates to the new frameworks that, in the post-NAFTA world, particularly North America, that may occur. And then many companies, particularly manufacturing and retail, are grappling with the uncertainties related to the U.S.-China, trade equation. And again, there are lots of unknowns there. Some things have evolved, some things have unraveled, some other things are really under speculation. So in this environment of uncertainty and risk, I think one of the tried and tested approaches to managing through the risk in this environment is to have a framework for scenario planning, right? That's, not a new concept. Companies have been doing scenario planning for 30 plus years, but the amount of data that's available both within an enterprise and external data from the market and from regulatory bodies as well that's available today is unprecedented. And using that data to create a digital version of that physical supply chain is something that we see leading companies doing more and more and becoming more and more interested in developing that digital equivalent of that physical supply chain, right? The buzzword being the digital twin of the supply chain. And in doing so, they're then able to represent the complexities. As we all know in supply chain, we deal with a very operational environment, right? So it's not enough to look at physical representation from a location perspective or from a shipment and order perspective, your supply chain. It's also all the operational constraints that are defining that supply chain. For example, lead times and the variability in lead times. Your dock opening and closing hours at a warehouse or a manufacturing plant, your line level capacity constraints if you're producing or manufacturing something, things like that that are fairly detailed but that are important in capturing the essence of that physical supply chain, and then being able to use that digital equivalent and then being able to leverage mathematical models to play out different scenarios. You mentioned this earlier. Supply chains are complex by their very, very inherent nature. There are a lot of interdependencies. it's an interconnected system as it relates to inventory, transportation, production and manufacturing, warehousing, distribution. There are a lot of influences that are internal to your organization from finance and marketing, but also there are a lot of influences that are external to your organization, your customers, your consumers, which ultimately are the source of demand, your carriers, your trading partners, your suppliers. So representing all of those things and being able to use advanced, you know, decisioning models to be able to play out different scenarios of the future is a way that you can really help navigate through what the potential eventualities can be, and then what your best outcome or best decision framework could look like as it relates to sourcing, as it relates to location decisions, as it relates to distribution, routing, inventory placement, etc. So that's where we see most companies spending their time on is in creating that environment and being proactive and getting ahead of the uncertainty and playing out these different scenarios with that foundation, a data foundation that's solid, that is something that can be in place. So when scenarios need to be evaluated, they can do that in a very rapid time frame.
Yeah, that's a great point. I want to explore that this topic of digital twin, if you will, a little bit later, because I think that that's a critical, you know, component of this. I mean, as you were talking about the scenario planning, I mean, just last Friday, I wrote about this on Talking Logistics, and you know, I was reading through some of the articles, and there was one on Brexit that talked about, you know, some of the actions that some of the pharmaceutical companies, specifically the insulin, makers. And there was a quote there, there was a line in that article about how Novartis actually began planning 3 years ago for the different scenarios around Brexit. And to me, that shows that, you know, I always say that whether it's something like Brexit or US-China tariffs or what's happening with NAFTA or whatever type of scenario you can think of, you know, those companies that plan ahead, do these scenarios, do these what-ifs analysis ahead of time are going to be the ones that are going to be the best prepared to, you know, manage through this uncertainty, which is a little bit of what you just talked about there. I think the other part of another kind of dimension of uncertainty, it comes down to the data. I mean, you talked about, you know, that there's a wealth of data out there, but for a lot of companies, you know, it's also, you know, trying to get that data and understand, you know, is it accurate? Is it complete? And trying to bring that together to, you know, put into a model is part of the challenges that they face as well. I mean, I hear that from a lot of companies as well, is, hey, we want to do scenario planning, but we don't even know where to begin from a data standpoint. I mean, do you see that as well as kind of one of the challenges companies have is, hey, maybe they want to do this analysis, but their data is spread out across multiple ERP systems. It's spread out, you know, maybe the third-party logistics providers have some of the data that they need to do this analysis. Some of the suppliers or customers might have some of this data. You know, is that one of the areas that is kind of like a starting point, if you will, in terms of how do you bring this data together?
That it really is. You know, it's interesting. About 20 years ago, I was a modeler, supply chain modeler myself, right? And 20 years ago, I would spend, if I was to play out a different, scenario of the future, I would probably spend about 80 to 85% of my time in just data collection, data cleansing, data harmonization, and the blending so that I could actually formulate a base case scenario, right? Thankfully, we are at a different time and age now, but it still requires some heavy lifting up front. And that's what I meant by when I said, lay out the foundation for from a data perspective. That data foundation and the heavy lift in doing that upfront is important. Like you said, a lot of that data will come from a plethora of systems. At the end of the day, there is no one single supply chain system of record in any enterprise thing, right? Supply chains have evolved, and you know, 25 plus years ago, we established the SCORE model as an industry, and that SCORE model was able to articulate in fairly good detail what the different sub-functions are, sub-processes are within the supply chain, and what would be the best practices around those sub-processes. And so companies organize themselves, you know, through this buy, make, you know, sell, so, you know, move, et cetera, you know, all the different elements of the SCORE model. And the way the supply chain systems landscape evolved is, and I've been in the supply chain systems landscape, as you know, for 20 plus years, we followed those same elements, those same logical functional elements of the SCORE model, and we created, you know, systems to manage those processes very effectively, right? So there are procurement systems and sourcing solutions that emerged. There were supply chain planning, advanced planning systems that emerged, TMS solutions, WMS, demand planning, inventory optimization, so on and so forth. And these are all important systems, and they all serve a very important purpose. The issue, though, is the data is spread across all these different systems, and there is no one single system of record. I don't think it is logical for most companies or practical for most companies to try to endeavor to create one single system of record for the supply chain. However, you can create a single system of reference for the supply chain where you are able to understand the logical dependencies and model the different behaviors of different elements of your supply chain and be able to manage those in a single system of reference. Right? And that requires an integration infrastructure that you're able to tap into multiple ERP systems, multiple supply chain planning and execution systems, as well as external systems and external, you know, parties that may be housing a lot of that data. But with that system of reference, and that requires some heavy lifting, right? And there is no shortcut to it. There are some lessons learned on how to do that effectively, but it's well worth the investment if you do that up front, because once you've done that and you have your system of reference established with the right integration touch points across the systems of records that are a plethora of systems, then you can start formulating the scenarios. Then you can start doing all the fun stuff that we like to do in modeling the future, right? And then playing out the different scenarios and using that framework then to make decisions of the future. Brexit is interesting, coming back to your point about Brexit, because with Brexit, obviously right now there's a lot of ongoing work around voting. Parliament has been voting there in the UK, and there's been a no vote, et cetera. So there's a lot of speculation on how all of that is going to play out. But beyond just the voting on whether to go ahead with it or not, with the proposal that their current government has put on the table, there's still a lot of lack of definition around detailed policy shifts that will happen to specific product categories and classifications related to those, right? And how those will unravel, I think, will take a long time. So clearly, as a result of that, there's been some stockpiling that's been having. You know, in supply chain, we've been dealing with bullwhip effects for years. Those have been caused by distortions in information and uncertainties. So, you know, the best way all of us in supply chain know how to handle that is you create buffer inventory. And so stockpiling is just yet another example of that. And that's a trend that is a little concerning, to be frank with you, because it's not just happening because of Brexit, but also it's happening here in North America in certain sectors. And so all the working capital efficiencies that we've been able to gain as an economy, as a global community, thanks to some of the improvements in supply chain excellence, they have a risk of getting compromised with the buildup in the inventory levels. And then, you know, inventory is a former colleague used to tell me is like cholesterol. There's good inventory and there's bad inventory, right? And so the risk is if you have a buildup of inventory, you can be stuck on, you know, you can be on a wrong footing, and then, you know, you're going to have to mark down, you're going to have to discount, or worse yet, you may have to just, in certain industries where you're dealing with perishable products, you may go to waste. So you know, in Brexit, for example, even though the timing for, you know, some of these decisions to get unraveled are in the March timeframe, upcoming March timeframe, a lot of the details will happen after that. You know, a lot of those details will unravel after that. And so there's been a buildup. You mentioned the pharmaceutical example with Novartis. There's also been examples where Easter is around the corner. You know, it's in April. And so there's been a buildup of a lot of perishable items like eggs. Easter eggs they experience a significant surge in demand during Easter time. And so there isn't enough warehousing capacity, for example, with temperature controlled storage facilities right now, and that's experiencing a shortage. A lot of these perishable items, especially in the food sector there, they get imported from countries like France and Italy into the UK. There are concerns there, again, on what's going to happen, what the tariff policy implications will be. I mean, if you're importing semiconductor chips where duties and tariffs are such a negligible part of your total cost of goods sold, you may not care about it. But if you're selling, you know, something for £5, and all of a sudden you're slapped on a significant tariff as a result of some of these policy shifts, you do care about it. It has a significant impact on your cost of goods sold and your overall operating margins. So lots of uncertainty, but companies that we work with, they are taking the time to invest in the foundation for the data, in creating that supply chain system of reference, in tapping into the integration with other enterprise systems and external parties and external data sets that are available. And then they have the environment in place so that they can create the scenarios of the future and then have almost like sort of a playbook, if you would. This is like the American football analogy, right? Is you have different plays for different situations. And that's where I think some of the companies, like the one you mentioned, are much better prepared to handle, and some other companies are going to be caught on the wrong footing.
Yeah, and a lot of great points there. I love the kind of the distinction between having a single system of record versus a single system of reference. I mean, I think that is something that is worth thinking about in kind of an important distinction there. Talking about the inventory buildup, I mean, we're seeing that obviously here in the U.S. between the escalating tariffs between the U.S. and China, a lot of companies have imported goods ahead of tariff increases, and there's another one scheduled for March 2nd. That if things don't improve, those tariffs are going to increase again. If you just read the papers, that has a ripple effect, right? You're seeing some downward turning in transportation now because a lot of companies already have moved significant product, heading into the holiday season. Lack of warehousing space, to your point. I mean, warehouses are very full because of all this product that has been brought in ahead of time. And whenever you do that, you're just creating, problems down the road. When you're kind of putting that system, out of balance. So you're seeing that, take effect there with some of the ancillary or unintended consequences that will ultimately, come from all of that. I think as a way to kind of start wrapping up here, I mean, I think the bottom line is that there's a lot of risk and uncertainty in global supply chains right now. We've mentioned things like, creating this single system of reference. We talked about digital twins. I mean, based on, your work with clients, I mean, what are some of the leading practices that, to successfully navigate these risks and uncertainties? I mean, what's required from a people, process, and technology standpoint, ultimately?
Yeah. The starting point from my perspective is data, right? And the foundation for the data. It would be great and very simple if there was one system of record for the supply chain, but supply chain is just so complex and there's so many interdependencies and the systems landscape for most companies are so complicated that to replace what exists today with one single system of record, that's a 25 plus year project that no one has the funding to or the appetite to engage in, right?
We saw that with kind of ERP, trying to create a single ERP for multinational. Those are still ongoing 20 years later.
Right. And this would be even more complex because to your point, a lot of these supply chain dependencies are not just within the enterprise, there are also, external entities involved. So a practical view of this is to think about a system of reference, and that data foundation is very important. Applying and being able to establish a supply chain data model that is able to look at the trade-offs and interdependencies between inventory and transportation and production and distribution is I think very critical, because those trade-offs sometimes can be very complex, can be very counterintuitive. I think that's the first part. The second part that I really think we need to focus on is the talent required within the supply chain profession itself. Look, I mean, it's no secret that technology is has the power to create value in the supply chain, in helping make smarter decisions and making faster decisions as well. But it's not, despite all the promise of AI and machine learning and all the automation that may exist, you still need the human capital and the talent that is able to take that physical world, the complicated world of the supply chain, and put it within the constructs of a digital model, right? And then being able to leverage the power of mathematics in playing out different scenarios. That's a skill set that, in my mind, I see as being deficient. There's not enough people with that skill set today. And because it requires a deep understanding of your operational processes and the business understanding combined with, you know, mathematical skills. Now, you don't have to be a PhD in mathematics to be able to do all of this, but you need to be able to understand the constructs of that data model and how to represent those physical complications within a software or within a data model. And that requires a certain skill set. And so I think the talent deficiency, the talent gap has been growing over time. One of the things we're doing at LlamaSoft is we're partnering with a few universities to go really deep and embed new capabilities and, in fact, embed our product into the curriculum of some of these universities. And we're tripling the size of our internship program. And then we're also opening up the graduating class of people who've gone through this curriculum and the internship program, not just for people that we would like to recruit, but also that our customers and our partners would like to recruit. So I think that there needs to be focus and emphasis around understanding the talent of the future that is required in managing these supply chains, and is very different from what was needed in the past, right? So that's the second area. I think the third area clearly is in being proactive with understanding what are the points of risk in your supply chain, and that's where you can do that. Even when you just look at your supply chain visually represented, all of a sudden things emerge that you may not have thought about, right? And being able to visualize that supply chain, and then of course being able to do predictive analytics around it, will help expose some of those risks, both in the near term but also in the long term, right? And in supply chains, you deal with as real time as everyone wants to be and is enthusiastic about being. There's a notion of a lead time. Right. If you're bringing in, merchandise or products or raw materials from Asia or China into North America on container ships, container ships don't move at the speed of light. Right. There's still a 14-day transit time for it to go from your origin in Shenzhen to your warehouse in Alabama. Right. There's a lead time that you have to manage towards. So being able to plan for the future is important. In many industries, you've got more cyclical elements. You've got a lot of seasonal elements. There's a buildup in a lot of industries. So you have to plan for that. And so understanding and being proactive about risk elements and getting ahead of the curve to handle the lead times is very important. That's the third thing. And then the last thing is having robust what-if analysis, right? In the supply chain systems landscape, the way the industry evolved, it was really focused initially on process automation. It also brought in capabilities to be able to leverage algorithms and optimization capabilities, now machine learning capabilities, to make decisions. But a lot of these systems haven't been architected to enable what-if analysis in a robust way. Demand planning is a good example of that, right? That demand planning software systems have been used for 15, 20 plus years, and they've created a lot of value in driving forecast accuracy, and that's an important input into any supply chain decision. But going forward, those assumptions that you made when you implemented your demand planning system 5 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago in some cases, they're no longer valid in today's economic equation. But those systems are not architected for enabling the what-if analysis and questioning those inputs and those parameters and those assumptions that were made. And so having that what if analysis capability, in my mind, is very key in being able to navigate through this risk and uncertainty that you talked about. So those would be the few things I would suggest is focus on the data foundation, create a system of reference for the supply chain, not necessarily a system of record, because that's going to be a never-ending project. And then you know, ensure that you have the right talent base within your organization that can really converge this digital and the physical world. And then be proactive about risk mitigation steps, risk identification, get ahead of the curve, and then have a capability for what-ifing and what-if analysis going forward.
You know, all great points. I'm glad you brought up the talent side of things. I mean, you know, as industry analysts, we always tend to, you know, always talk about technology and focus on the technology side of things. But, you know, the human side, the talent side of the equation here is critically important. And I think, you know, what you mentioned that you're doing, I know other software companies have been doing this for some time as well in different areas of the supply chain in terms of really reaching out to the universities to kind of build the next generation of talent relative to, you know, to today's emerging challenges and the role of technology and so forth. I think is a partnership that needs to continue moving forward. I love the identification of risk. You know, I've always said, you know, supply chain professionals, supply chain executives, you know, they always ask at whatever meeting, they always ask, well, what's going to be the cost of this? They're always good at asking, what's going to be the implications on service? But they don't often ask, you know, what are the risks of this? And I think being able to ask that question and understand what the answer is, being having the capabilities to understand what those risks are, and then to your point, then being able to do these what-if analysis in a quick and intuitive, way is going to be important. You know, so Razat, we're kind of short on time here, so I'm just going to go right to my last question here. And, you know, real briefly, you know, as a way to wrap up, I mean, what questions then should companies ask themselves to assess whether they're, you know, a leader or a laggard, you know, with their ability to respond effectively to whatever is going to happen over the next few weeks and few months, here as we get started in 2019?
Look, the simplest gauge for that is think of a scenario and think about how long does it take for you to run a what if, right? That's the simplest and most non-automated approach to answering that. And be honest about it as an organization. And if you have invested in some of those foundational capabilities I talked about and the talent and the data foundation and the integration and the what-ifing capabilities, you'll be able to run those kinds of analytics very, very quickly, right? We've developed a fairly detailed maturity model where we go in and benchmark with our customers as an approach in how we engage with them. A lot of our partners have benchmarking services as well. A lot of consulting firms that do this. But the most sort of simple way of gauging it is, does it take you a day to 2 days to run a quick what-if analysis on a new scenario? Or does it really take you weeks or months, right? And if it takes you weeks or months, then there's definitely some room for improvements in what you're doing there.
Yeah, I love that because, I mean, companies can't afford weeks and months to make, you know, decisions these days, because the reality is that in weeks or months, things can radically change, right? And just everything we've talked about today, you know, the situation with Brexit could be completely different, you know, a few weeks from now. Right. Things with the new NAFTA agreement, you know, what if Congress doesn't ratify it, right? You know, that can have an impact. So, you know, being able to understand that and be able to answer those questions quickly is important. Well, Razat, I mean, like I always say at the end of all our episodes, we always just manage to scratch the surface on these topics. And certainly this is a topic that, you know, we could probably spend the whole day and whole conference just talking about everything we talked about here today. But I think you provided some great insights and advice, for companies to take action in this area. So again, thank you for making the time to be with us today.
That's great. Good talking to you, Adrian. Thanks for having me again.
Great. I want to thank those of you that joined today. If you're watching this episode on demand, either at the LlamaSoft website or on Talking Logistics, and you've got a question or a comment for Razat, you can post it there. I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.